I know that there are guys slipping in your DMs from Good Children listeners.
For sure.
Have you hooked up with a listener?
So.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and what a good week to have Good Children's Andrew Muscarella on the podcast. He did the Gay Ass Live show in New York, and he has proven to be perfect in every single way, partly because he accepted my flirtations during this recording so masterfully. You've been all sending me flirty DMs, and I'm not going to say I don't enjoy it, because I do. And it's been a nice break whenever I need a moment away from my family during this vacation I'm on in Hilton Head, South Carolina. But truth be told, it's been lovely. Just a very nice time to be away, which I feel like I've needed. I had a good cry after watching another episode of Couples Therapy on Showtime, which really put me into a deep, gorgeous spiral. But part of, I think, the reason is because I've had to lessen my... Well, I haven't had to. I've chosen to lessen my Lexapro dosage because I'm about to do my next big mushroom trip, which I can hopefully report for the next week's episode, if not 2 weeks from now. So Lexapro apparently fucks up your experience with the shrooms, where like I think it lessens it. So I'm trying to lower the dosage, obviously, very gradually. But the dreams have been a little cuckoo-loo-coo. But I think it's all going to be worth it for the therapeutic moam. And speaking of therapeutic moams, let's get into this week's episode with Andrew Muscarella. We talk about his interesting infatuation with Guy Fieri. We talk about his feelings towards certain teen heartthrobs. And yes, we do answer the question about hooking up with our listeners. Can't wait to see what you think about this episode. Leave a 5-star review if you have not. I just read one that just says the best. 5 stars, and honey, that's how you do it. We also have the Patreon at patreon.com/gayasspodcast. For just $5 a month, you can support this gay ass institution. Enjoy the app. I love ya. When I say Muscarella. Thank God.
I know. I mean, like, growing up, everyone was like, oh, like, mozzarella, Andrew Mozzarella. I'm like, shut up. It's not creative. Like, stop. But yeah.
Yeah, at least say, like, musky.
Well, that was my nickname.
Oh,
which
shit.
Was that mortifying? Maybe. But it's musky and musty. Like, musty is like, oh, you stink. Musky,
the D,
I'm like...
this D is bad. The musky is giving, like, bare... gay niche.
It was when pit. I was in my jock era, you know what I mean? It was like, yeah, you can call me musky, call me whatever.
Well, listen, Andrew Muscarella is on That's a Gay Ass Fucking Podcast.
Yes.
Andrew, this has been a long time coming. Thank you for coming on the pod.
Thank you for having me.
It's an honor.
I'm very, very excited. Very excited. When I saw Joe on the pod, I was like, I wasn't even jealous, but I was my turn.
What were you then?
I was jealous.
I wasn't even jealous. I was actually really fucking jealous.
Yeah.
So I was angry. The both of you came on That's a Gay Ass Live show and blew it out of the mother trucking park. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I'm currently working on a video, another sizzle reel of all the shows we've done, because we're about to announce our next ones. And I just pulled a clip of you for that video, which is going to be my first question for this ep. Andrew, you have gone on record in front of scores of people in Brooklyn, New York, saying that you would indeed fuck Guy Fieri.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew, who hurt you?
Listen, like, I've been hurt a lot, but the thing about Guy Fieri that you can't deny is that, like, he is hot. You know what I mean? There is style to him. The sunglasses behind the head, I'm kind of like, he knows what he's doing in bed. You know what I mean?
I don't, but I can respect your journey, because who am I to judge? Listen, if I see a 52-year-old man with a bald head, a beard, and mm-hmm. sad eyes, honey,
I'm down the clown.
Don't get it twisted. He doesn't have a bald head. He has that stunning blonde platinum.
Oh, no. I was just talking about my kink. Your kink is
everything else was like almost on par.
That is true. Your kink is like uncle at barbecue who will ask you if you have a girlfriend and how many kids you want, and you're 11.
Absolutely. But he's going to do it in such a sweet way. You know what I mean? So that's all that matters. That. Yeah.
Do you get into the mechanics in your head about who's going to be doing what physically to each other between you and Guy Fieri?
And Guy. So I really at the beginning was thinking that Guy was going to be a top, and I was like fully ready. I was going to be like, okay, I'll prep. I'll do whatever is needed for Guy Fieri. But then it kind of came over me and I was like, no, he's giving bottom. So I think, listen, if we're flipping, amazing. That's even better. But I think that he'd swing to be a bottom, for sure.
I love the confidence you said, R.E., flipping. I just love that you can say, if that's the case, I'm down. And that takes a strength in a person. And have you always been a strong flipper?
No, I haven't always been a strong flipper. That's actually as of late. I started very much bottom. And then now, as you get older, I'm like, you know, I want to have some fun, too.
Of course. All the bottoms are devastated out there. Well, then listen, you have had a lot of joys in your life, not only the flipping, but also Good Children Podcast, of course, taking over the globe. But not enough people are asking you, Andrew, about a title that we need to dive into, which is the time you won the Norwegian Joys Mr. Hairy Legs of 2022.
Wait. I can't believe you're bringing this up. I'm almost about to show my legs on the pod. Yeah, no one's talking about that enough. I honestly, so listen, I entered the Mr. Sexy Legs competition. And I was taking a look around the boat and I was like, I think I do have the sexiest legs. Like, I work on these legs. Like, my other profession outside of being a podcaster is a fitness coach. I was like, I know what I'm doing with these legs. I'm not kidding. I threw ass on the deck of the Norwegian Joy, and the clientele of people were not like, I should be really, you know, humping the floor. It was kind of like everyone was gagged, and I don't know if in the best way possible, but I knew what I was doing. And no, I didn't win. I didn't win Mr. Sexy Legs. I won Mr. Hairy Legs, which almost felt like a dig.
Did they create that category for you, or was it?
Well, there was like Mr. Sexy Legs was the winner.
Right.
And like the runner-ups were like Mr. Hairy Legs and then like Mr. Chicken Legs.
Oy vey.
Yeah, and I was not getting chicken.
If I was awarded Mr. Chicken Legs on the Norwegian Joy, I would jump off the Joy.
Mm-hmm.
And be at the bottom of the ocean.
It wasn't a joyous occasion, I can say that. But the man who won, he did have a maybe 3-year-old son on the boat that was cheering for him. So I think he was getting sympathy votes, which is sweet. But like, I needed that for my confidence. And they didn't know that. You know what I mean?
No, they didn't. And they should have. Well, but I also am very interested in this fitness life of yours, because I've seen the images online of you and the video of you throwing a medicine ball down on the ground and the arms of it all. I mean, fuck the hairy legs. Let's talk about the arms. You seem to be this amazing dichotomy, if I may sound like Barbara Walters, of someone who like grew up just like a lot of us, feeling theater nerdy, feeling baby fat puberty vibes, which I can say that as someone who was also of that experience. And then like, you're this flip king, fitness queen, Norwegian Joy Mr. Hairy Legs. What years did the flip happen? If forgive the expression.
The flip with fitness? The flip
How did you go from A to B?
I grew up very large, right? Like, I was always bullied my entire life for being fat and gay, obviously, but they went hand in hand. Like, being gay, you could hide. Being fat, I couldn't at the time. But I think that when I came out as gay, I think that we all know that being gay, sometimes it is very body forward, especially when you get on the apps. I got to a place when COVID hit that, like, I got crazy, right? Like, I was going crazy, like, oh, yeah, working out nonstop. I was definitely eating disorder vibes, whatever. It was not looking good. So then I was like, I can't continue going on like this. Like,
yeah,
it's not healthy. And yeah, I'm getting validation from people because I look, quote unquote, good to them.
Right.
But I was like, you know what? If anything, like, I want to educate myself on how to be healthy and how to help people like myself that might be going through things like this. So I was like, fuck it. I'm going to study to be a personal trainer. I took like 2-3 months. And then I moved to Brooklyn and started working in fitness. And like, my sole responsibility when people walk through the door is genuinely to make them feel comfortable, because I know a lot of people don't feel comfortable when they walk into a fitness class.
And I
kind of put a smile on your face and play some good music and have fun while we're working out. That's literally all I want to do.
Andrew, I'm so like, you are, yeah, wave girl. That this is huge, because I do know that when a lot of gay people come out, of course, we feel like your instant thought is like, I have to look like the underwear ads at Macy's. But yeah, then I think there's this like next phase of like you're saying of like, well, actually, what is the healthy version of being sexy in my own skin?
Yes.
And in a way that's like not making you feel truly insane.
Yeah.
Right. And I've always made this joke, but it's true for me, that like, if you see me working out very like too regularly, I'm not okay. Like that's how you know, sure, I'm in my like rock bottom. And so I, so funny you say that, during the beginning of the pandemic, I was deeply unemployed and like, mm-hmm, also losing my mind. And so I did workout videos every single day and I looked great, but I was obviously like struggle busing.
Oh yeah.
And so it's so interesting for me that you've like reclaimed the asshole bullies from your youth, and now, oh, yeah, you're like, and now you're helping yourself and others. So I hugely applaud.
Thank you. They can't keep me out. Everyone told me, especially growing up, it was mostly like male authority figures in my life, I think, were the people, because I played sports growing up, which was another thing that we can dive into, because all I wanted to do was be on a stage. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I'm a repressed theater gay, but I was playing sports and I was playing lacrosse in New York. And that's crazy for me, but I was starting goalie, the whole thing. But the feedback was always like, if you want to touch the field, you need to lose 30 pounds, or like, you're a lazy sack of shit. Like, you're all like, literally all of the things that people would say to me. And I was like, you can't break my soul. You know what,
honey,
I mean? You won't. Honey is right. So now I feel like I'm in power. I feel really good. And I'm helping other people.
I have a really maybe silly question, but mm-hmm, to me, a part of the way that adults would speak to children was a product of its time. But do you and your profesh opinion think, mm-hmm, that there, I mean, I know it happens, but do you think, how widespread do you think it is the asshole male coaches are still saying you have to lose X amount of pounds, you fucking sack of shit, before you can touch the field? Do you think it's still really prevalent these days?
I think it's still happening. I think it's because what was going on was like, especially in a locker room or on the field, it kind of was like, it was like their classroom, right? Like, sometimes, sure, I would have a teacher and they'd be like, what happens in this class stays in this class, right? Like, yeah, they would say the most crude things out loud. And for that, I think that it's still happening. And I think that especially if like your goal is to go to college for a sport or anything, mm-hmm, they're thinking that they're helping you by saying that you need to lose weight and look a certain way. But at the same exact time, they're actually just like disqualifying your ability, or they're judging your quote unquote ability by what you look like, which,
yeah,
is
the
really,
only
really
thing they're helping is you rack up therapy bills. Like, that's the only thing.
And now I'm in BetterHelp. So, you know what? BetterHelp is helping. And this is not a sponsor. I don't know if you have the BetterHelp sponsorship, but
I don't, but do you have the BetterHelp sponsorship?
We don't have the BetterHelp sponsor. We should. We literally, if you're going to sponsor any podcast, it should be two manic gays that are in therapy. So
I got dragged because I did say the name of a therapy site that I have used that like helps you connect a therapist, and then my friend, mm-hmm, was like, they're not paying you, stop saying their name. And I was like, Jesus. But like, If anybody wants to know, message me, and then I'll tell you, and then we'll petition for them to pay me mucho bucos. But yes. Speaking of the mucho bucos that this podcast will hopefully earn me one day,
yes.
I gotta ask you the famous podcast question, Andrew Muscarella, musky, sexy, gay-y, queenie. Whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
Oh, it really sucks because I think that there's two men in my life that we blame. And I think that I can be judged for both of them. One, I've publicly said on Good Children before. And it is Justin Bieber. And I know. But at the time when I was in sixth grade and I heard One Time come on the radio, I was like, first off, who is this queen that is hitting those notes? And then secondly, when One Less Lonely Girl came out, it wasn't even like I had a chance. Like, I was jealous. I was experiencing jealousy. I was almost enraged by the fact that I couldn't be his One Less Lonely Girl.
Oh.
So that's how I knew.
What? That's actually really insightful because if your boy crush pop star girly, if you will, is singing about a girl and you know that you can never be her, that's like exhibit A. That's exhibit gay.
That was exhibit gay. And like it was such a weird feeling at what was like 11, being like, this, why do I want to go to Madison Square Garden and have when he pulls out that one chair on stage, like the off chance that he would choose me, like, am I delusional? Absolutely. But like, I just knew in that moment it would never happen.
Oh my God. But it's so real because I've seen like those videos of the girls who think that Harry Styles in One Direction is going to pull them backstage and fuck them silly. And then it cuts to a picture of them with like four layers of braces. They're fully 12 and a half. And it's just delusion. But it's like, you can't help but place yourself in the chair on the stage.
No, exactly. And I think that since that moment, I've been living in the chair on the stage. So sure.
Did you go to the Justin Bieber concert?
I never did. No. And now at this point, I'm kind of like obviously over Justin Bieber, but you know, he'll always hold a special place in his heart.
What was the song that you said came on the radio that first you were like, who is this queen?
One Time.
How does that go?
I'ma tell you one time that I love you. Tell you one time that I love you. Hey, she looks so deep. You know that one? No.
I actually don't.
Really? It's a good... It was like his OG song on the radio. He was probably 14. Yeah, oh my 14 God. And I was 11. Yeah. So
in a world, if he had been into boys, you could, there could have been.
I was playing out all of these scenarios in my head. I was like, it's a 3-year age gap. I'm fine. But you know what? Hailey Bieber, good for you. She got it.
Good for you, girl. So Jay Biebs is the first man. Who's the second?
The second one was a year prior, and that was based on She's the Man and Step Up, and you know who it is.
Channing Tatum.
Yeah, Channing Tatum.
By the way, a clip resurfaced recently of She's the Man where he's like in the gym and he like flips the cell phone and then he puts it to his head. I don't judge the Bieber. It's not of my experience, but Channing Tatum is of my experience.
Oh yeah. Channing Tatum is of my experience to a point where I'm like, Step Up, watching it again for different reasons. I was like, I'm gay. I was like, I'm really into this dance movie. Like, this is amazing. I want to dance.
Oh my God.
But
yes.
Then I also was like, who the hell is that man?
Isn't that so funny how two sides of our gay brains are like, one side is like, I need to do choreo, and the other side is I need to pirouette onto his cock.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was too young at the time to look up like Channing Tatum nudes, but obviously now if I see a hot man on screen, unfortunately I'm like, Channing Tatum nudes. And then when I got of age and looked up Channing Tatum nudes, I was like,
are they out there?
They're out there. They're out there.
Dick flaccid or hard?
Flaccid.
How is?
Not bad. So he used to be a stripper, is what, like, when it was coming to Magic Mike. That's why, like, he was a good casting for Magic Mike. That's why, probably why he was also, like, very good at the dance move, Step Up, the whole thing.
Yeah.
But there were pictures from those days. for
full
sure.
Flaccid Channing cock.
Yeah, absolutely. It was beautiful. It was exactly what you were thinking it was going to look like.
Well, my question that longtime listeners will probably know that I'm going to go there, but pubic hair wise, was there any?
Do you think that Channing Tatum would have any pubic hair? Absolutely.
It's wishful
not thinking,
Andrew.
I know, but he's somebody who like wants to be a naked mole rat, and that's a completely different story, right? It's like,
well, by the way, that's like a whole other category of trauma, which is seeing the Channing Tatums and the Abercrombie bags mm-hmm. and seeing the hairlessness. But like, come on, not even Boosh. I'm sick of it
is right.
I asked this when your amazing co-host Joe Head was on this podcast mm-hmm. because we are a bit different in age. You're a bit younger than me. So I always am curious, you know, as now in your elder, the difference of opinion of body hair as a young person versus now. You sport a stunning hairy chest. Did you have shame as a young person, or were you of the time of like, no, it's actually becoming more in vogue again?
I actually did have a lot of shame when it came to my body hair. I was shaving a lot. Like I would shave my chest, but then also like even like my hair, like I had this weird aversion to curls like my whole entire life. I was like, the curls are not cute, because this is the thing. In school growing up, I don't know why I fell into like the judgment zone of people with curly hair. I was like, they're weird. Like, I don't know. It just felt like.
Was it like a ginger thing where people decided that people with red hair at a time were weird, but now it's like I see a ginger and I'm like,
I guess.
Jesus.
I don't know where my brain was at when I was in like middle school or high school, but I was like, I don't know. Like having curly hair just felt weird to me. So I would brush it out and it looked like I had a toupee and a comb over. And I was rocking that my whole entire life. But then I was like, I'm going to let it curl once I got to Brooklyn. And the same thing with my body hair. I was like, the cops are here. This is New York. But I was like, I'm going to let my chest hair grow. Funny that you asked, because yesterday I actually trimmed it for the first time in years.
Really? How did it feel to do that?
It felt good. I kind of was like, I was looking at my body in the mirror and I was like, what's going on with my chest? It just like, it was getting to a point where it was bushy. And my niece, actually, she was 3 years old, nothing like a 3 year old to make you a little self-conscious. She looked at me and she goes, why do you have fur? And I was like, wait, T.
Drag me, Brittany. You know, what's funny is that I have had such an overcorrection of like embracing body hair that like, I haven't really ever in recent years done that trim, but I do see some guys that really make it, that really rock it. But mm-hmm. I'm also married to someone who will like put a knife to my throat if I touch it. So like, there is real life danger.
I'm like, so are you okay? Are you good?
I'm blinking twice.
I'm blinking twice. No, I do love chest hair. I love the fact that my chest hair is curly too. Like that's,
come on.
Sir
full
curls.
Circle. And now your hair on top of your head is curly too.
Exactly.
Are you currently single?
I am currently single.
Okay. So as your Jewish matchmaker, give me the pitch for, obviously you're looking for someone who is, I call them your coffee meets beta. You are at a party and you're going to be doing more of the chitty chatting than they are, correct?
Yes, correct. I mean, well, that's always been the case. I'm not opposed to the other side.
No, I think it'd be too much. I think it'd be too much. And that's a compliment, because that's, you and I are in that way the same. Like if I was with someone that chatted as much as me or more,
it would be a
nuclear warfare. Physically, what are we talking?
Physically, I think I'm actually getting to a point where I'm throwing a lot of that out the window for a while, because I'm 5'8", right? And I don't think that's necessarily short, but people will call me a short king, and that's literally fine, I guess. But I'm 5'8", and for a while I was like, oh, I want someone who is taller than me, who's bigger than me, just because like I wanted to be the one that felt comforted. And for some reason, I attributed that to height. Now I'm at a place where I'm like, maybe it's because I'm flipping. You know what I mean?
I
actually don't care if they're tall or if they're short attributes. I kind of want them to be a little bit bigger just personally, but I'm all over the place. If you see the people that I've been on dates with, you'd be like, none of them match. So I'm really personality driven. Like you got to be cute, but it's the conversation for me.
Do you have a preference of meeting IRL versus app?
I mean, I would love to meet someone in real life. Like, would genuinely love. I feel like I've been in situations where I have talked to people, but oftentimes when it comes to gay men and me, I don't know if this is something that I'm dealing with, but I'm like, oh, they want to be my friend. You know what I mean? So that's
you friend zone yourself.
Always. Always.
I think that's an interesting thing to dive into because I'm watching this Showtime series that is old. And if anybody here, I mean, I have been dragged in the DMs for this, but it's called Couples Therapy. And it's like three seasons in, and it's this couples counselor who is giving marriage counseling. And it is so interesting to see these couples, their issues, and also individually what people are dealing with. And she's just fucking like, I honestly, probably just like your podcast, I got into it because of TikTok. The clips, posted the clips of the Showtime series on TikTok. And you just see these people who, of course, sometimes talk in monstrous ways or like it's clearly the problem, but you also have really relatable relationship issues. And if I was this gorgeous Israeli therapist who will be played by Rachel Weisz in the movie that will be coming out in 4 calendar years, I'd say, I would say to you, Andrew, if you're constantly friend zoning yourself, what's the feeling behind your worthiness of love?
See, no, now we're going to get deep. This is literally like my therapy sessions. I think for a really long time since I grew up experiencing bullying or whatever, and especially entering the gay space, like I entered the gay space via the apps, right? Via Grindr, via Scruff. Like, and when you start that way and you start by not showcasing your personality, but showcasing like
your stats
and like how I could perform. And listen, sure, I'm a performer, right? Like, I'm an entertainer. So I know I'm going in there and what I'm going to do. But it's really hard to get that out of your head. So when you then go into social situations in real life with other gay men, it almost is like it doesn't even compute for me when it comes to worthiness of love. It's like,
is it because they can't see the stats? And like, do you feel like without that projection or without that presentation, you're not even an option?
Yeah. A lot of the times, it's not even that I'm not confident. Like, I definitely was not confident, and now I'm entering a place of confidence. But it's like, I enter these situations and I'm like, no, not attracted to me. They want to be my friend. I'm fun. Like, I'm going to make them laugh. Like, I'm going to be the one that makes them laugh.
This is super interesting to me because the only reason why my experience is different is because I first started dating in college where there wasn't the app and the website stuff. And then I did OkCupid when I met my first boyfriend. But it was like very early days of all of that. And so I was with him for 2 years. Two horrible breakups, if we're being honest.
Oh, geez.
And then I had some IRL moments. I did some more online dating. But then met Matt in 20... I mean, take two. Yeah. I'm like, wait, it was not 1900s. It was in 2013. And now we're here to live to tell the tale. So, like, my first experience was either an OkCupid profile, which was annoyingly long, like 50 questions, or figuring out how to present myself with the gay boys in college or in person. And so I don't think I was even able to develop that identity of, like, I'm just a top or just a bottom or I'm just an otter, blah, 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 blah. And so, like, so your experience is super interesting because I'm sure a lot of people have that of, like, if I'm in real life and I don't immediately explain what I am or I can't even see someone being attracted because they don't know what they're dealing with. And so I love, though, that you're in this new place of gaining confidence. And, like, I think it's just the next train station along the way, which is that you're going to realize that your genuineness is what is so hot and what is so captivating. And then you deserve someone to, like, chase you down.
That's the dream. So I am feeling very confident about what is to come. Yes. But listen, if you know anybody in New York and you want to matchmake legit in real life, let me know.
Okay, that is for me and for the listeners. I will 100%. And by the way, I recently posted a video about saying that it's frustrating that even though I'm married, like, you are still allowed to flirt with me like that. And so once I posted that, I got some more flirty DMs and a couple of dick pics that were, I will say, great dicks. They sent them knowing they were good dicks. But what's the vibe for you when I know that there are guys slipping in your DMs from Good Children listeners?
For sure.
Have you hooked up with a listener?
So I will say, first of all, for our listeners, they tend to be more women dominated, which is great, which is amazing. Love the girls. With the gays, though, there are a few DMs. Well, a few, definitely a good amount of people DMing me. I think that a lot of the DMs, though, that I receive, I'm like, either you look identical to me or you're like 18. So I'm like, I'm not going to engage in this conversation. Have I hooked up with a listener before? Yes, I have hooked up with a listener before, but it was via an app and they didn't let me know until I got there. So it was almost like you're talking to them and then you walk through the door and they're like, by the way, like, I love the pod.
By the way, to that person, that was smart of them, because lead with just like, I'm a human being. And then I have two questions. One is, how did it feel for that reveal? And the second question is, do you wish they had waited until after the hookup?
So how did I feel about the reveal? I honestly appreciated the fact that they, quote unquote, got to know me before I showed up there.
Yes.
And then did I wish that it happened afterwards? Yeah, I do wish it would happen. Because again, then I get in my head a little bit. And I was actually going to ask you this question. And maybe it's different. Well, this podcast is also pretty personal. So you're talking about your own experiences. But like, how would you feel hooking up with listeners?
You know, it is a very good question that, of course, I asked you. And I'm like, what the fuck is my answer? And I think that what the person did with you that was absolutely genius and the way to do it is connected as a person first.
Yes.
I think if it does get into an interesting territory when the lead in is, I know who you are before you know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a separation of like, there's like a cognitive dissonance with that.
Exactly.
That being said, honey,
sure,
I'll hook up with a listener. I mean, for sure. Like, yeah, I think attraction trumps all. And like, if you connect on a human level, it doesn't matter if you listen to me or Joe Rogan. I take that back. It does matter.
But
it doesn't matter if you listen to me or to Good Children or whatever it is. I think that what I have learned through this podcast actually is that no matter how successful the people that come on the podcast, or no matter how successful I feel like I'm becoming,
mm-hmm.
we are all really fucked up humans.
Oh yeah.
Who are just trying to find our bliss and heal our traumas. And it doesn't actually matter. Nothing in a positive way. Nothing really matters.
Yeah. That's really important.
And as long as there is respect and like a two-way streetedness, because of course there's going to be a dynamic of like both ways of like, let's say if I felt like I was in a position of power,
mm-hmm.
and I use that's fucked up. And then if the listener is like, I don't know, I feel like obviously there can be a diciness, but as long as the intentions are pure and you're into each other, come on now.
I need to start getting into it, because it's my friends make fun of me, because like, I'll go out to a gay club, and I think that like Good Children has definitely grown in a way that I'm really proud of. It's not like a overnight success, but we're definitely growing pretty steadily, especially and it's centralized to cities. So like, I understand that when I'm going out in Brooklyn, like there could be somebody that says something at the club, right?
Yeah.
But one of my friends 2 weeks ago when I was going out was like, there were about 3 to 4 different guys that came up to me, and they were like, Andrew, like, you could pull, like, you don't, but every single time someone comes up to me, they're like, oh my God, like, I love you. And I'm like, oh my God, thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah.
That means a lot. What's your name? And they're like, oh, Jason. I'm like, thank you so much, Jason. And then they leave. And then I'm like, wait, that guy was so hot. But it was like, the interaction was already
You need to bridge the gap. You need to bridge the gap. I think it's like, what was your name? Oh, Jason. It's how's your night going? And bam, bam. Then you're into like, but I get it. I get it. It's so, I mean, honestly, though, on the flip side, too, it's like if I were to meet, God, I want to name drop someone who is so like in a different, because like I'm thinking of names that are like kind of like in our sphere that I shouldn't publicly say. Let's say I were to meet Jonathan Groff.
I love that. I love it, Jonathan Groff.
He is to me in such like a, you know, like a completely different sphere of being. Mm-hmm. I would do anything for this man. But to go from Jonathan, I'm such a fan. And of course I'd be like, oh, I know this person maybe, but still to bridge the gap to be like lip locking, there's a few steps you gotta get through. And it's not easy for either person. So
okay.
I just wanna raise a glass to you because you are not only a great person, you're a great podcast host, and if any listener or non-listener gets the chance to lock lips with you at a club in Brooklyn, honey, they're lucky.
And they're like pillows.
Let me ask you the next podcast question, which is, Andrew, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
Why am I always I start every single response being like, someone's going to judge me for this. Because, like, there will be. There are two, and I can't choose one ever.
Oh, great.
The first one is solely based on the impact that she's had on me and my childhood, but I know that she's publicly stated as being bitchy.
Oh.
And that.
Wait. Let me guess. Okay. Childhood, publicly bitchy.
By childhood, I mean, like, she's definitely been. Has she been in a Disney movie? Maybe one, but like she was definitely popping off in the 2000s. She sings, which comes as a shock every single time she opens her mouth.
Who is this? Is it,
but again, people say that she's really rude. I can't believe people though, because it could be,
I mean, it's not Lea Michele.
No.
Christina Ricci.
No.
Who is it?
It's Anne Hathaway.
Listen, she's having a half-a-renaissance. She's having an Anna Renaissance. She is. Yeah. No, I think she's actually not a bitch anymore.
Okay, I hope so. Because again, if I'm saving her, we can't get into bitch fights. Oh, I could. I think that we would be able to get into it with each other.
I'm just picturing you in a dystopian society. The buildings have burnt to the ground and you and Anne Hathaway screaming at each other.
Literally screaming and then like singing I Dreamed a Dream. I'd be like, Anne, just do it one more time.
No, Andrew, she's coming. She's come back. She serves looks. She's that girl.
And she's earned it. She's earned it. Because again,
she's earned it. And by the way, there was a lot of the hatred towards her. She did a terrible job hosting the Oscars, and I think she would say that too. But a lot of the hatred was, I think, misogyny and for sure. I'll say it, jealousy. And also, she had an earnestness that I will also say was annoying. And so I think she sort of transcended that. And listen, when she won the Oscar and she said it came true, kill me. I like that. And again, I'm a pretty earnest person, but it was performative earnestness, like, and that's why I really hated it.
The things about earnestness, though, like, and again, I do like Taylor Swift, and I'm gonna take it back to Anne Hathaway. But sure. If we're talking earnestness, that's where I'm like, if somebody like Taylor Swift can sell out that many, like many stadiums, and people be fawning over her, but every single time people are clapping, and then she brings the mic to her mouth and she's like, and she pulls it away and she's like, me? You're like, no, yeah, you. Like,
honey,
no,
look around.
Oh shit.
There was a 2.3 seismic earthquake because of your concert, really, huh?
She's like, I can't believe this is happening to me. And like, I get it. Like, it's all about being humble. But I think the same thing goes with Anne. It's like, sometimes you're in those moments and you're like, I can't believe it happened. I literally can't believe it happened. But it's about delivery. But yeah, I mean, she proved herself. Ella Enchanted, Devil Wears Prada, Les Mis. Again, like when she opened, I didn't know she really could sing like that. She can sing. And she cut her hair on screen. Like, come on.
Did she ever? She's in the camp of people who are so gorgeous and great actors that you don't think they can possess a skill in musical theater, and really deep cut. But Katie Holmes hosted SNL in like a million years ago, and she tap danced. And I remember being a little gay boy in St. Louis, Missouri, watching Katie Holmes tap dance. And I was like, Tom Cruise's wife can do a falafel change?
Mm-hmm.
Could not believe it.
Couldn't believe it. You're like, good for
Who's your other character actress?
So is she considered a character? I mean, is she a character actress? Maybe. Also a childhood childhood influence in my life. And I'm saving her because I feel for her deeply.
Mm.
And I've always stood by her side. And it's Selena Gomez. Listen.
I'm not laughing at. I'm laughing with the idea of all the gay people who yell at me when they're like, you think anyone's a character actress? And I have to defend it because I'm trying to advocate for the guest. But the fact that you're trying to make me defend Selena Gomez as a character actress,
that's what I'm saying. I'm like, listen.
She's on a show with Oscar winning, you know, and she plays a character and she is an actress. Tell me your relation.
My relationship with Selena. I just think that like she is a product of like, I mean, childhood stardom, call it Wizards of Waverly Place, but then we'll also like the anxiety and the fame that has come with it. Like she's not doing well, but like it makes me, it's unfortunate to say that like her, it's not that her not doing well makes me feel for her even more, but like it makes me relate to her and be like, listen, I want to keep you around. Like I want to be that person that we can chat through these things and like feel like you have somebody if you're feeling a little bit down.
It's almost like your relationship to being on the chair on stage with Justin Bieber. In this sense, you want to be the person that can help her through her traumas.
And listen, maybe it is the Justin Bieber effect because like now I'm going to be talking to Selena Gomez and she was at one point talking to Justin Bieber, but we can chit and chat about that.
Honey, we can and we will. But by the way, if I can bring it to the character actress of it all, we might look back on history with Selena Gomez and say that she was a modern version of the like movie studio, like MGM, like what happened to Judy Garland with them force feeding her the drugs and making her get through all of the filming. In a way, maybe the Disney industrial boop boop boo is what was done to Selena, and then she has had to emerge from that, and now she has this new act of performing. And am I gonna say that Selena Gomez is the Judy Garland of our generation? No, but she she has been performing her whole life.
Performing her whole life and performing regardless. And especially when it comes to singing, she knows she's not good, right? But she'll still get up on that stage and and perform.
Wait, so like I'm regarding like singing?
Like regarding singing in that way.
Is she bad? I don't.
She's not great live. She's not great live. And I think that she knows that she's not good live, but she's like, I have these songs and I'm turning them out. I'm going to perform.
Do you think Fergie knows that she's not good live, or she thinks that she is good?
I think that Fergie thinks she's one of the top pop icons of the generation.
Fergie only pictures herself singing next to the Whitney Houstons of the world, and yet she should be with the Selena Gomez's.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That duet, oh my God, would be...
Stop. Fergie featuring Selena Gomez. Selena Gomez will jump on any feature at this point, but listen.
Have you seen the video? That reminds me of when Jessica Simpson sang with Jewel. Have you seen that video?
No. Wait,
it's so good. It's because Jessica is really... And by the way, Jessica Simpson is a good singer, but it's deranged, just fully deranged, deranged, and it's important. Wow, these are really great answers though, and your vulnerability is what makes this podcast a hit. Yes. If I may say that. Speaking of vulnerability, on your bio, on your profiles, you're basically admitting that people think you look like Ben Platt, and you say you're not Ben Platt.
Yes.
But you also have revealed on your profiles that you did in fact meet Ben Platt.
I met Ben and I came face to face.
Is there any tea from coming face to face with your celeb twin?
It's really interesting. For a while, I went through a twincest phase by saying at one point in my life I was attracted to Ben Platt. This was like when I was 18, right? And then people were like, Andrew, you kind of look like Ben Platt. And I'm like, no, now it's fucking weird. So I love myself, which we all should. But it's been happening a lot more lately. So then when we got invited to the screening of his new movie, Theater Camp, which if you have not seen.
I saw.
It's great. Amazing. Excellent. Literally was hilarious. And I forget every single time. Like, it's so easy. I don't know why it's so easy for people to judge Ben. Obviously, Nepo Baby, I get it.
Yeah.
But he is a good actor and he is a really good singer. So the movie was great. But when I met him at the screening, I was a little bit nervous, right? I was walking around and I saw him out of the corner of my eye and I was like, I have to say something before I leave this space.
Good for you.
So he was walking out and then I was like, wait, Ben, like, hi, my name is Andrew. And he looked me straight in the face and he goes, I know who you are. You're all over my screen. And I was like, shut up. He was like, I know people say that we look alike. We need to take a picture. So Joe was standing right there. Joe was like, I actually still to this day cannot believe that Ben Platt asked me to take the picture or take the picture with me.
How did you not lead this interview by just saying, hi, Eric, I'm good. Ben Platt asked to take a picture with me.
I actually don't. And then again, when we were leaving the actual movie itself, he was like, bye, like, see you soon. And I was like, oh, it's game over because I'm going to be in the same space as Ben again. I would hope, like, as the pod continues, I want to act. I want to do all these different things, right? We're all delusional. But I was like, listen, Ben, if there's ever an opportunity for us to be in the same movie and we're playing like a gay brother situation, I'll do it.
See, you know what you did just there, which is brilliant and necessary, is just like putting things out to the universe with the energy of self-love and like, manifestation.
Yes.
Because that is something that is not naturally grown in many people. Like that, like I've gotten to the point in my life where I will see a Ben Platt or someone IRL and be like, there's no chance I can let this moment go by without saying hi. Mm. But then to pitch myself as their gay brother in the next thing, that is genius. And by the way, you said it in a way that I know was not monstrous because like you were coming from a place of we see each other.
Yes.
And that, and by the way, I see it happening and I can't wait to be working the red carpet while you and Ben are taking, while I'm interviewing.
Listen,
oh my God.
If any of the listeners take anything from this episode too, it's like, yes, you can be delusional.
Yes.
But believe your delusions and speak with confidence, and then that will allow it to manifest, right? Like, I'm so delusional. I say I want to be an actor. I said I wanted the podcast, right? And like, we put out the first episode and talked to an audience of people who didn't exist, and it worked. So it is just believing in what you're doing, and it will happen.
God, that is such good advice. I love that so much. It's, you are allowed to be delusional, but believe the delusion and be confident in that delusion and then act accordingly. Mm-hmm. Be so well said. I'm so thrilled for your Ben Platt experience. That's 10 out of 10.
Thank you. It was.
Speaking of like what you've manifested, which is this like smash success with Good Children, you've performed now in all these different cities. You went to LA, San Diego, San Francisco, Seattle, Boston. Did you have a city that spoke to you the most, or was it kind of equal opportune?
I would say, aside from New York, when we did the New York City Gramercy Theater show in June, I think that was when both me and Joe cried before we got on stage. I got emotional afterwards because when it was like a year after we started it and we couldn't believe that we were performing at the Gramercy Theater and it was packed to capacity. Like we're still in a place, and I think we'll always be in a place that we're so thankful and grateful because it's so personal to our story that people even want to listen to us speak.
Yeah.
But I would say for city wise, San Francisco was my favorite show.
Yeah.
It just felt like right. LA was great as well, but the vibes of San Francisco. Like, we did a meet and greet afterwards, and it just, like, there were moms in the audience with their children, and then the moms would come up to us and be like, you don't understand, like, what you're doing for my kid. Like, they never felt like they fit in. They never felt like they were seen or whatever. But, like, they do find friendship in you guys. And I know that's so parasocial, but, like, hearing that from a mother specifically, it obviously, like, we're publicly healing as well. But that was, like, such a beautiful moment. And I'll never forget it.
That is unbelievable. And it's just a testament to, like, the power of embracing who you are. And then through that, allowing other people to embrace themselves. And that's, like, the goal of, I think, both of our podcasts. And that's, like, why it's so exciting to see you and Joe just thrive. And again, when you did the Gay Ass Live show in New York, that to me, it felt like my wedding. It was one of the best nights of my life. Stop. And you two were such a big part of that. And
we had so much fun.
Oh my God, it was incredible. So I can't wait to make it happen again, truly. Before we end this stunning episode, I need to ask you a question, which I did not prep you on. Andrew Muscarella, what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Oh, Sister Act.
Thank you. I knew you were going to deliver, and you certainly did. Andrew, this has been such a fucking joy. You are unbelievable, and I want you to tell the listeners, where can they follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Andrew Muscarella and on TikTok at Andrew_Muskie. And for Good Children, you can find us across all social media platforms at Good Children.
And you better listen, y'all. Thank you, Andrew. I will see you at a gay club, and I will approach you and say hello.
Please. We're gonna kiss.
Yeah.
Duh.
I'm so sorry to say this, but was that not just a perfect episode of That's a Gay Ass Podcast? Thank you, Andrew Muscarella. I will take to the streets and make the posters. If you've not left a 5-star review, gosh, that would be amazing, on your podcast app of choice, and let the world know. You can also follow me at Eric Wills, follow the pod at Gay Ass Podcast, and keep an eye out for the lineup and tickets going on sale for the next LA show on September 14th and New York. We're coming back to you in the fall. Bye.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.